A long time ago, a president of the United States nearly scuttled a celebrated murder trial with remarks that just might have had accused mass murderer Charles Manson go free.
The president made the flat statement that Charles Manson, who is on trial for his life in Los Angeles, is guilty, directly or indirectly, of 8 murders. A few minutes later, his press secretary called back and said he was retracting the president's statement because he had failed in referring to Manson, failed to use the word alleged.
President Donald Trump may have stepped into a very different trial in a military courtroom by making numerous statements about the possible guilt of defendant Bo Bergdahl.
We have Sergeant Bergdahl, a traitor. Right?
We're tired of Sergeant Bergdahl, who's a traitor. He's a traitor, a no-good traitor.
I always bring up Bergdahl. We get a traitor, and we get a dirty, rotten traitor.
He deserted. Remember the old days, a deserter, what happened? Bang.
30 years ago, he would have been shot. And people are tired of it.
You know, in the old days, boom, firing squad. No, it's true.
That was just a portion of audio from a video compilation of then-candidate Donald Trump played in Bergdahl's courtroom and described as disturbing by the presiding judge. Bergdahl was captured and held captive by the Taliban after he walked off his post in Afghanistan back in 2009. He's accused of being a traitor and a deserter. Rachel Van Landingham is a retired Air Force Judge Advocate General and professor at Southwestern Law School in Los Angeles. She's also vice president at the National Institute of Military Justice and says this Trump factor is potentially a huge deal in the Bergdahl trial.
So the military has several different ways to handle this, the military justice system. First of all, there's standard, run-of-the-mill, unfair pretrial publicity. And that's the same thing that could fatally taint a civilian federal trial or a civilian state trial, as well as a military trial. But the military has something more and much greater, and that's really what is at heart in this case. And that is the military has its own code, its own penal code, its code of military justice. And in Article 37, Congress recognized that there is a problem within the court-martial system in that we have these individuals who are commanders that they are the ones that decide to charge a member of their command, to prosecute them. They're non-lawyer commanders. So the lawyers may advise, but the commanders make the decision to bring someone to trial. And yet these non-lawyer commanders also pick the individual sitting in judgment. They pick the jury members. And what Congress found, and they found volumes of evidence to support this, was that the commanders were basically directing and telling the jury members what to do. And that is just obviously antithetical to justice, right? These folks weren't getting a fair trial there. The individuals were listening to their commanders and doing what they were told, as is the military way, the military lifeblood, the military's ethos is obedience to command, obedience to orders. So Article 37 prohibits an individual in the military, commanders, but as well as other individuals, from improperly influencing the action of a court-martial.
So according to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the moment that court is convened, Article 37 is triggered for commanding officers who might have a relevant role in that case.
Yes, but it's actually, it doesn't depend on referral is what we call it, you know, similar to indictment. It doesn't depend on that. For example, there have been cases that have been thrown out because of Article 37 comments by a commander years, you know, a year or so before. A commander, for example, stands up in front of his or her entire command and says, I have zero tolerance for DUIs. If a member of my command gets a DUI, they better get kicked out of the military. Well, that is basically the commander setting the tone and the climate and saying, if there's a DUI, you must decide to either dismiss or to give a bad conduct discharge and give a punitive discharge and get this guy out of the military. So they can say things that are not necessarily regarding a particular court-martial. In fact, most commanders, most individuals in the military are smart enough not to say something about a particular case because that has long been taboo. I mean, the military has been very careful since 1950 to steer clear of Article 37. So it's usually what happens in these policy letters. Or, for example, even President Obama a few years ago made some comments that in the throes of the latest sexual assault scandal, he stated that there was zero tolerance for anyone in the military who commits sexual assault. In fact, he once mentioned dishonorable discharge. And his counsel there at the White House immediately walked those comments back. And in fact, there was at least one case believe it was in the Navy, in which the trial judge actually threw out the case because of those comments by President Obama that the military would have zero tolerance for those that commit sexual assault, because of the unfairness, because of the recognition within the military that those military members sitting on that in judgment of that defendant are so trained, indoctrinated, inculcated to obey and to be sensitive to their command climate that it would be very difficult for them to set aside those kind of inflammatory statements.
Is a candidate for president an Article 37 candidate, shall we say, someone whose speech needs to be constrained by Article 37?
And that's where we're in uncharted territory. It's unclear. First of all, he never walked back his comments once he did become president of the United States. He has made numerous comments over the last several years, very public comments that Sergeant Bergdahl is a traitor, which is one of the absolute worst things you can call an individual, especially someone that wears a uniform. He said that he should be shot, that he should be thrown out of an airplane. And there's really nothing like that in the past. So the defense here is arguing for dismissal, pure out throughout the case. It's fatally tainted. Sergeant Bergdahl can never get a fair trial within the military. The government is going to argue, as they did yesterday at their hearing on this issue, that, well, there are less drastic remedies the judge can issue. For example, the judge can simply say that there are more challenges. That's what we call peremptory challenges to the jury members. But the problem with that is that Sergeant Bergdahl's defense team is limited to asking these jury members whether or not they've either, you know, heard of President Trump's comments and whether or not they can set those aside. But what they can't ask is, did you vote for Mr. Trump? But even if a military member can say with a straight face that I can set all these incredibly inflammatory comments aside, I know he's my commander-in-chief. I know that I've been trained throughout my years of military service to obey everything that he says and to listen and be attuned to the command climate. I can set aside. Article 37 also works to preserve the integrity of the entire military justice system. The highest military court has said the perception that an individual in the military cannot receive a fair trial because of the environment of unlawful command influence can fatally taint a proceeding as well. And that's another argument that the defense has been advancing here, that the integrity of the system is at stake. But I truly believe that military members in this situation simply cannot set aside the inflammatory statements that their commander-in-chief has made.
Well, whatever the decision, precedent-setting testimony will certainly be considered there in court. Rachel Van Landingham is a retired Air Force JAG law professor at Southwestern Law School in Los Angeles and also vice president at the National Institute of Military Justice. Rachel, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me today. I've really enjoyed it.